Imagine spending like thousands of dollars on the absolute bleeding edge of computing power.
Oh, yeah, the dream setup.
Right, only to literally watch the physical cables inside your machine melt into a puddle of plastic just because you wanted slightly better lighting in a video game.
It's wild to even think about.
It really is. So, welcome to the deep dive. You are joining us right on the heels of what has to be one of the most chaotic, revealing weeks in recent tech history.
Definitely.
We're looking at August 9th through the 15th, 2026.
Yeah, it really was a collision of immovable objects and, well, unstoppable forces this week. We're looking at a week where massive software ambition hit very literal physical melting points.
You're literally melting.
Exactly. So we're going to be unpacking this massive intelligence briefing we got from the Tech and Weekly Roundup. And, the overarching narrative is just undeniable. Our
Right.
demand for computing speed and digital immersion is it's severely fracturing the boundaries of both hardware engineering and cybersecurity.
So we often talk about the tech world like it exists in this frictionless, weightless vacuum called the cloud.
Right, like it's just magic in the air.
Exactly. But everything happening this week proves that the cloud is heavy. It requires an absurd amount of power, and quite frankly, it is highly vulnerable.
Oh, absolutely.
To understand why our physical systems are straining so hard right now, we first have to look at the staggering advancements in software that dropped over these past 7 days.
We really do.
Let's start with the AI frontier, because Google just threw down a massive gauntlet.
They absolutely did. The whole industry was caught off guard by Google's public release of Gemini 3.7 Flash.
Yeah, nobody saw that coming this early.
No, they didn't. And the sheer metrics of this model are what we really need to focus on. They built this entirely on their next generation TPU v6 pods.
Okay.
And by doing that, they managed a 50% reduction in what we call time to first token latency.
Wait, okay, let's decode that for a second. Time to first token. That is essentially the lag between when you press enter on a prompt and when the model actually starts generating the first syllable of its answer, right?
Precisely, yeah. It's the initial computational hurdle.
Right.
So reducing that by 50% means the system feels, well, almost telepathic in its response time.
That's crazy.
It is. But the real headline is the scale they're operating at. Gemini 3.7 Flash rolled out with a 4 million token context window,
Wow.
right? Sustaining processing speeds of 240 tokens per second across
Yeah.
their enterprise cloud instances.
I mean, that number sounds incredible on a spec sheet, but I have to push back here a little bit.
Sure.
4 million tokens is roughly equivalent to handing the AI like a dozen full-length novels all at
Yeah,
once.
well.
Does the average enterprise developer actually need that kind of memory capacity? Or are we just watching a very expensive, very public ego play between Google and OpenAI?
You're right to be skeptical. It definitely looks like a pure benchmark flexing contest at first glance. But looking at the telemetry data and
No.
how developers are actually using these tools in the wild, there is a ruthless business logic behind it.
Really?
Yeah, enterprise developers aren't just building simple customer service chatbots anymore. They are utilizing these lightweight, high-throughput models for autonomous workflow orchestration.
Meaning they want the AI to run the background processes of a company all by itself.
It goes deeper than that, actually. They need an AI that can instantly ingest an entire corporation's legacy code base.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Hold all of those thousands of interconnected files in its active memory simultaneously, understand the routing logic, and rewrite entire segments on the fly without losing the plot.
That's a lot to keep track of.
Exactly. You simply cannot do that with a small context window. It requires holding the entire map of a company's software in memory at once.
And as always, OpenAI did not just sit back and watch.
No, of course not.
They fired back almost immediately with GPT-5.6 Sol Ultrafast, but they took a completely different approach to achieving that speed.
They did. And honestly, the mechanism they used is brilliant. OpenAI implemented severe sparse attention architectural redesigns.
Okay, sparse attention.
Right. To understand why this is a breakthrough, you have to look at how older AI models work. Traditionally, a model tries to pay equal mathematical attention to every single piece of data in your prompt all at once.
Which has to be exhausting for the system.
It is. It's computationally exhausting. Sparse attention changes that underlying logic.
So how does the model know what to ignore without like missing something crucial?
Think of it like reading a really dense 500-page technical manual.
Okay.
You don't read every single conjunction or filler word with the same intensity as the bolded glossary terms, right?
Right. You kind of skim for the important stuff.
Exactly. Sparse attention allows the neural network to dynamically triage the data. It selectively focuses only on the most relevant conceptual anchors and basically skips the noise.
That makes a lot of sense.
And by implementing that redesign, OpenAI slashed mathematical and logical inference latencies by 2/3.
Which is how you get to these near instantaneous reasoning speeds. But, you know, raw speed is only half the battle.
Mm-hmm.
The other half is where and how you are actually permitted to deploy that speed in the real world. Which brings us to a massive geopolitical business maneuver we saw this week, the Apple and Alibaba alliance.
Oh, this is a masterclass in regulatory survival.
Yeah.
Apple needed to deploy Apple Intelligence to hundreds of millions of iOS devices in China, but they faced severe roadblocks from the Cyberspace Administration of China.
Except because you can't just drop an American-trained large language model into that market.
Yeah, exactly. The regulations just don't allow it.
So instead of fighting the regulatory wall, they bypassed it by partnering with Alibaba Cloud. From the Techin briefing, we see Apple fine-tuned a localized, highly proprietary model sitting directly on top of Alibaba's Qwen architecture.
And the choice of Qwen is really critical here. It's an architecture that's already deeply optimized for Mandarin semantic nuances.
Right.
But more importantly, it is already pre-vetted and fully compliant with local data governance laws.
So it's basically pre-approved.
Yeah. By layering their own fine-tuning on top of it, Apple maintains their ecosystem experience while perfectly adhering to varying global rulebooks.
So we have AI devouring server racks on the enterprise side, but consumer hardware is under an equally brutal assault this week.
Oh, for sure.
Interactive media is basically demanding server-level compute right inside our living rooms. The gaming industry practically broke the internet with the compute demands of its upcoming slate.
Yeah, the visual fidelity we are seeing in interactive media right now is requiring mathematical computations that were previously reserved for, like, Hollywood render farms.
Let's talk about the Disney D23 Expo. They dropped the gameplay reveal for Kingdom Hearts 4.
That trailer was insane.
It really was. I watched the trailer, and seeing the character Sora running through this photorealistic metropolis called Quadratum, it looked entirely live action.
It did.
Plus, they confirmed the Star Wars and Frozen 2 worlds. But the underlying tech is what's really fascinating here.
Right, because that photorealism is happening. Because the game is running natively on Unreal Engine 5.5.
Mm-hmm.
And Unreal Engine 5.5 utilizes dynamic global illumination and micropolygon geometry.
Okay, what does that actually mean for the graphics?
Well, instead of faking shadows and light like older games, the engine is calculating the exact trajectory of millions of virtual light rays in real time.
That is wild. And it isn't just high-end desktop rigs feeling the heat. Over in the handheld space, Nintendo launched Pokemon Pocopia, which just shattered records.
5.2 million units sold in its launch week.
Just staggering numbers. And this is exclusively on the Nintendo Switch 2.
Right.
Hitting native 1440p resolution at a locked 60 frames per second on a handheld device.
Yeah.
How is a portable console managing that without, you know, draining the battery in 10 minutes?
It's heavily leveraging the Switch 2's custom NVIDIA Tegra architecture.
Okay.
Pushing 1440p at 60 frames per second requires massive memory bandwidth to move billions of pixels every single second. So NVIDIA designed a system on a chip that utilizes AI upscaling to render the game at a lower internal resolution. And then it uses machine learning to flawlessly upscale it to 1440p before it hits the screen.
Add to that the Call of Duty, Modern Warfare 4, open beta hitting 3 million concurrent players this week.
Yep, just continuously taxing servers while running the new Ricochet V3 anti-cheat systems.
The software utopia is here, but this is the exact moment where the reality of physics taps us on the shoulder.
Yeah, physics always wins.
Because all of this magic Unreal Engine 5.5, 4 million token contexts, dynamic upscaling, it all requires electricity. Which brings us to the physical meltdown. Let's talk about the NVIDIA GeForce RTX 5090 crisis.
This is undoubtedly the defining hardware failure of the year.
Oh, absolutely.
The RTX 5090 is NVIDIA's flagship consumer graphics card. To handle the extreme AI workloads and ray tracing calculations we just talked about, these cards are drawing up to 575 watts of power.
575 watts. I mean, that is a staggering amount of power for a single component inside a standard desktop computer.
It's huge.
And the problem isn't just the power draw itself, right? It's how users are trying to fit these massive basically brick-sized cards, into compact PC cases.
Exactly. People are having to bend the main power cables just to get the side panel of their computer to close.
Yikes.
Specifically, they are causing lateral cable bending on the 12V 2x6 power connectors. And this is where electrical engineering becomes incredibly unforgiving.
You know, our previous analogy for this was trying to shove a fire hose of water through a garden hose, but that only explains the volume.
Right.
It doesn't explain why a slightly bent cable creates a literal fire hazard.
That's a crucial distinction. It's not just about too much electricity. It's about friction and surface area.
Okay, walk me through that.
Inside that connector, there are tiny metal terminal pins. When you bend the cable sharply, you physically shift those pins, pulling them slightly out of alignment.
Ah, I see.
And when that happens, you drastically reduce the surface area where the metal contacts actually meet.
So it's like trying to force a massive crowd of people rushing out of a stadium to suddenly squeeze through a single revolving door.
Exactly. The flow of electricity remains massive, but the pathway has been choked off.
Right.
So the electrical resistance skyrockets. And in electronics, resistance equals catastrophic heat. Hardware testing labs this week found that the terminal sense pins inside those bent connectors were hitting temperatures exceeding 92 degrees Celsius.
92 degrees Celsius, that's nearly 200 degrees Fahrenheit. It was literally melting the plastic socket housings.
And turning them into goo.
But I have to ask you, if we are designing consumer graphics cards that draw over half a kilowatt of power, and they can melt into a puddle if a cable is bent a few degrees inside a normal computer case, haven't we fundamentally failed at hardware design?
It's a fair question.
At what point does the industry admit this is a dead end?
You're touching on the core existential crisis of the silicon industry in 2026. For decades, the entire focus has been on silicon lithography, making the chips themselves faster. But as processor thermal envelopes push past 500 watts, we are hitting a brick wall. Electromechanical engineering, the literal pins, wires, and plastic housings, that is now the true bottleneck.
So how is the industry responding to this? I mean, they can't just tell consumers they are plugging it in wrong while their machines are actively smoking.
No, manufacturers are scrambling. They issued immediate hardware advisories telling people to buy right angle, 90 degree adapters so the cables route naturally without bending.
Okay, a Band-Aid fix.
Pretty much. But the long-term physical fix is rolling out right now. Third-generation connector revisions.
What makes the third generation different?
They've redesigned the plug with shortened, deeply recessed sense pins.
Okay.
The engineering logic here is a brilliant mechanical fail-safe for an electrical problem. The sense pins are what tell the power supply that the cable is properly connected.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Right, because they shorten those pins. If the cable is not seated absolutely perfectly, flush against the socket, the pins simply won't make physical contact.
Meaning the system won't deliver the 575 watts at all. It just cuts the power to zero before any heat can even build up.
Exactly.
That's a really smart hardware patch. But not everyone is just brute forcing the math with more wattage. There is a massive contrasting push for efficiency happening on the mobile side.
And there has to be, because you obviously can't put a 575-watt melting cable in a smartphone.
Yeah, that would be bad.
Very bad. We saw critical leaks this week regarding the Google Tensor G6 processor, which will power the upcoming Pixel 11. They are abandoning older manufacturing processes and moving to TSMC's cutting-edge 2-nanometer and 2-node.
Okay, we hear 2 nanometers thrown around constantly in tech marketing. What does moving to a 2-nanometer node actually look like at the physical level?
It means they are shrinking the transistors on the chip to a microscopic scale, so small that you are practically counting individual atoms at this point.
That's insane.
By packing the transistors that tightly together, you drastically shorten the physical distance that electrons have to travel to complete a calculation.
And less distance to travel means less energy required to push the electron, which translates to less energy wasted as heat.
Precisely. That physical shrinking, combined with a custom neural TPU, is expected to reduce on-device generative AI power consumption by 40%.
Wow.
And Samsung is making the exact same play, pushing their native 2-nanometer SF2 production for the Exynos 2600.
Right.
So we have this incredible divergence right now.
Yeah.
Desktop hardware is becoming an industrial furnace, while mobile hardware is achieving near-magical efficiency.
But, you know, while the hardware engineers are fighting a very visible thermal battle against melting plastics, the cybersecurity experts are fighting an entirely invisible war.
Yeah, they really are.
Because all of these hyper-connected, high-speed ecosystems we just talked about, they create a massive sprawling attack surface.
Right.
We are battling physics on the hardware side, but the logical side is kind of collapsing under its own complexity. Let's talk about Legacy Hive.
Legacy Hive was exposed this week, and it is a zero-day vulnerability that represents a complete nightmare scenario for enterprise security. It specifically targets Microsoft Windows Active Directory authentication architectures.
An Active Directory is standard, right? It's the master list of who has permission to do what on almost every major corporate network on Earth. But what makes Legacy Hive so insidious?
It doesn't attack the passwords. It attacks the underlying logic of the registry itself. Specifically, it exploits registry inheritance protocols.
Walk us through how that actually works.
In a corporate network, permissions cascade down. If you are the supreme administrator at the top, the files in the folders beneath you kind of inherit your security clearances.
Okay, makes sense.
What Legacy Hive does is use a malformed string of code to trick the system's internal logic. It creates a completely unauthenticated guest-level request, but masks it so the system believes it is a legacy instruction cascading down from the root administrator.
So without ever typing in a password, an attacker can escalate their privileges directly to NT authority system,
Yes.
which is basically God mode. You own the machine, you own the network, all without physical access to the host.
Microsoft had to deploy emergency out-of-band security updates to neutralize it because the vulnerability was baked so deeply into that inheritance logic.
Wow.
But Legacy Hive is a pure code flaw. Then you have the Trezor incident from this week, which proves that sometimes the code isn't the problem at all.
Right. Trezor makes highly secure hardware wallets for cryptocurrency. And to be clear, the cryptographic wallets themselves were not hacked.
Yeah, come with a fortress held.
Right. But a third-party customer support database that Trezor uses was compromised.
And that database contained the email addresses and contact telemetry for thousands of hardware wallet users.
So the device holding your crypto is totally safe on your desk, but the attackers now know exactly who you are, what kind of wallet you own, and how to reach you.
Yep.
And that immediately triggered severe, highly targeted spear phishing campaigns.
I'm looking at this dynamic and I have to ask.
Yeah. If the hardware fortress is secure, but the customer service database leaks the emails, isn't the real vulnerability just human psychology at this point? We are patching complex registry inheritance protocols, but the attackers are just hacking our inbox.
That is the grim reality of cybersecurity in 2026. The technical perimeter is incredibly strong, so attackers are targeting the human element, which is, well, notoriously porous.
Right.
If we connect the Legacy Hive exploit and the Trezor spear phishing campaigns, it perfectly explains why the industry is aggressively pivoting to Zero Trust Network Access, or ZTNA.
Zero trust. What does that actually look like in practice?
In the past, network security was built like a medieval castle. You had a heavily fortified moat, firewalls, passwords. But once you crossed the drawbridge and were inside the network, the system trusted you. You could just roam the halls. Zero Trust completely abandons that model.
Oh, yeah.
It assumes the moat has already been crossed. It assumes the enemy's already inside the house.
So it requires continuous verification.
Constantly. It doesn't matter if you are logging in from the CEO's office desk or a local coffee shop. Every single action, every file request requires independent authentication.
That sounds exhausting, but necessary.
It is. Robust base-level code reviews are failing because the software is simply too complex to guarantee it's bug-free. And humans are too easily manipulated by sophisticated phishing. Zero trust is really the only mathematically sound defense left.
It's a sobering realization, especially when you factor in the other threats detailed in the Tekken briefing this week.
Oh, yeah, there's more.
We saw hidden XMRig cryptojacking malware buried deep inside legitimate-looking macOS binary bundles. We saw ultra-critical command injection vulnerabilities in SAP NetWeaver portals.
Which is terrifying because SAP runs global industrial and supply chain infrastructure.
Exactly.
It is the unavoidable price of hyperconnectivity. The faster, more capable, and more integrated our digital systems become, the more devastating any single point of failure is.
Okay, let's step back and sort of synthesize everything we've unpacked here because it has been an incredible journey. through just 7 days of August 2026.
It really has been a wild week.
We started the week watching AI reasoning speeds absolutely double, with Gemini 3.7 Flash and GPT 5.6 Sol utilizing sparse attention to instantly understand entire corporate code bases. Mm. We saw gaming consoles prepared to push unprecedented ray-traced photorealism into our hands with Unreal Engine 5.5.
But the physical world pushed back hard. We saw the very real electromechanical limits of that ambition with 575-watt hardware connectors literally melting under the friction of those energy demands.
Right.
And we watched enterprise security face structural collapse with zero-day exploits like Legacy Hive totally rewriting the rules of the network.
The ultimate takeaway from this Tekken Weekly Roundup is that enduring technological leadership isn't just about, you know, moving fast and breaking things anymore. The stakes are way too high.
Way too high.
It requires pairing bold algorithmic innovation with uncompromising physical engineering and digital security. You can't utilize a 4 million token context window if the server rack catches fire.
Exactly.
And you can't trust the automated workflow if a zero-day exploit gives an invisible attacker the master keys to your network.
It is a razor-thin balance.
Yeah.
The companies that dominate the rest of this decade will be the ones that master the electromechanical engineering and the zero-trust architectures just as flawlessly as they master the silicon lithography and the AI training models.
It brings us right back to where we started. The cloud isn't magic. It's intensely physical, it's highly vulnerable, and it is running incredibly hot right now.
Uh-huh.
But I want to leave you with a final thought to ponder as you go about your week. We've talked extensively today about how incredibly fast AI models like GPT 5.6 and Gemini 3.7 are getting at logical reasoning and autonomous workflow orchestration, right? We are trusting them to read and rewrite massive code bases. So how long until these same AI systems are the ones autonomously finding the next Legacy Hive zero-day vulnerability hidden in the registry before human security researchers even know where to look?
Or conversely, how long until the AI is the one designing the physical hardware patches, calculating the exact surface area of power pins required to stop our GPUs from melting?
Exactly.
When the software becomes smart enough to engineer its own hardware and patch its own security, that is the ultimate closed loop.
It really is. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the tech and intelligence briefing. Keep questioning the digital world around you, because as we've seen this week, the most fascinating mechanisms and the greatest vulnerabilities are usually hidden just beneath the surface.